You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Donald Roberge. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police are investigating what they believe to be Chinese police stations in and around Montreal. The makeshift stations, which are operating out of community centres in Chinatown and Brossard on the South Shore, are suspected to be run by Chinese government officials who monitor and menace Chinese-born residents, including the forceful return to their homeland for persecution. A statement from the RCMP says that they recognize that Canadians of Chinese origin are victims of alleged activities conducted by these centers, and that activities and any form of intimidation, harassment, or harmful targeting of communities or diasporas in Canada won't be tolerated. The RCMP is also urging anyone who believes that they have been threatened by the government officials to contact them. Though these are the first of their kind to be investigated in Quebec, other police stations have been detected in Ontario and British Columbia. Former cabinet minister and astronaut Marc Garneau has announced that he will be resigning his seat in the House of Commons. Representing the Montreal riding of Notre-Dame-de-Grâce-Westmount since 2008, the Quebec Liberal MP said in a speech that he had made a promise to his family that he would leave politics late last year, while thanking his staff, parliamentarians, and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for their support. In 1984, Garneau became the first Canadian astronaut to fly in space and went on to lead the Canadian Space Agency from 2001 to 2005. He has since been a federal minister for both transport and foreign affairs. The Pop Montreal Music Festival has announced its first names appearing in this year's lineup. Among the acts who will be participating are folk artist Bonnie Prince Billy, Seattle hip-hop group Shabazz Palaces, and German electronica pioneers Tangerine Dream. A press release by the organizers also states that, once again, the program will consist of more than 200 multidisciplinary artists, including more than 150 musical acts and 50 Quebec-based musicians. The Pop Montreal Festival, which was first initiated in 2002, will take place across multiple venues between September 27th and October 1st. Reservations, event information, tickets, and passes can be found at popmontreal.com. For more, visit CJLO 1690 AM podcasts on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties.
Please stand by.
There is no beauty, only ugliness. There is no glamour.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? CJLO 1690 AM, this is Grade A Explosives, and you might notice that my voice is much crisper today than it normally is because I, Satan, guest host for Grade A Explosives throughout the entire month of Metal March, is here on your Earth. That's still what you call it, right? Earth? I never liked that name. It had a really weird kind of ring to it. I don't know. It just never fit the way I wanted it to. But it's not about me. It's not about me. It's about you. You and your vanity. My favorite sin. That was one thing the devil's advocate got 100% right. Favorite sin? Vanity. Anyway, the point is, I am here today, guest hosting the show, and it is a spectacular show, if I do say so myself, and I did. First off, first hour, we have an interview that I'm going to be aired that Andrew did with the fine gentleman from Boston, one of my favorite cities, by the way, in Bedtime Magic. They seem like good people from me listening to the interview. Of course, I listened to it beforehand. I don't want to get called out during it and then have to respond live on air. That would be so embarrassing to have to do, you know. Andrew did that. And so he's going to be, that's most of the interview. Like, the first hour is going to be that. The interview, me playing songs that I choose from the two records, which are, by the way, free today. If you go onto CJLO's various social medias, which, by the way, again, you're welcome. My greatest creation. Ugh, just so much evil. So much. But Bedtime Magic, interview with them. And then the second hour, the stonery goodness of some who will be here in the CJLO studios, much like me. So that's what's going on today. Let's start off, though, with this interview. It's with Bedtime Magic. They're from Boston. They're a duo. And that's, I think, all I really need to tell you. So hopefully you enjoy this. Keep it locked. This is Great A Explosive, CJLO, 1690 AM.
Hey, everybody. It's Andrew. I am joined today by two very special guests who are from Alston, not Boston, but technically Boston, but also Alston. You might know them from such bands as Coleman, Liver, Big Dumb Animal, The Taste of Silver, and you also may know them as the ex-Lonely Dog X, and as he is referred to in some of the interviews, the High Five Guy. I'll let them say their own names here so that I don't mess them up, because, you know, people's names are not my forte. So, gentlemen, tell the people out there who you are and what you do in your band, which is Bedtime Magic.
All right, we'll go alphabetical order. My name is Morgan. I play drums and organ and do a little bit of singing in Bedtime Magic.
I'm impressed with your level of research, by the way.
I do what I can.
More about us than I know about us. I'm Nicholas Pentabona, and I do bass, and I do vocals, and I do the running around because Morgan's stuck in a seat the whole time. So,
I mean, that's fair. Somebody has to do the running around.
I got to earn my keep.
Well, I always like to start off these interviews. I like structuring my interviews, so I always start them off the same way. So let me start this one off. I figure that by the time bands get to me, they have already done a bunch of interviews. I've done some research and listened to some that you guys have done over the past, while. But let me just pose to you, what's one question you don't want to be asked or you're tired of answering? If I have it on this list, I'll strike it. You won't have to address it.
I mean, Morgan's very compassionate. I'm not. So this is wonderful for me. I don't know. We get asked a lot, like, how we met, but you seem like you know how we met, which is great. And we get asked a lot about the band name, but, like, it's out there. Everybody knows it. And then one guy asked us what heavy music was about. And I thought he was being sarcastic, but he actually just didn't know. He was like, why is everybody yelling? What are they doing that for?
You don't have to ask us which one is the cute one. You know, that's for people to decide on their own.
It's Greg, the elusive third member that's never appeared.
You guys, we all know that the cute one is obviously the dogs you guys have. That's where we have to go with. The dogs are always the cutest in all scenarios.
Little puppers.
This is true.
Well, I think the real first question that I have then is, you guys have now put out two albums. So how many more bed-related songs can you come up with? Really, titles is really, I think, the first question we should address here. No, wait.
Yeah, all of them.
All of them.
Just all of them. We're going to go through all of them.
Well, let me start off with a real question here. Okay, so I'm a recent convert to bedtime magic with the latest record, Between the Sheets. And I'm curious, I see that you have kind of the same producer for this as well as Pillow Talk. Was this the same kind of writing process and recording process as the last record, or did you guys approach it differently?
This one was actually pretty different. We wrote most of this record during the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. So, you know, with our first record, with Pillow Talk, that was all songs that we'd been playing for a while. And, you know, we'd played live and we had a lot of experience with them, you know, like we knew sort of how they worked. And with Between the Sheets, most of the songs we wrote and recorded having never actually played them in front of other people. And so, you know, with Pillow Talk, I think we wanted to sort of record our set, you know, record like the record so it sounded how we do it when we do it live. And Between the Sheets, we didn't know how we were going to do it live. You know, we had some ideas, but we were a little bit more willing to sort of mess around a little bit in the studio. And then sort of came the hard part of actually figuring out, like, wait, can we actually pull this off? You know, both Nicholas and I think, I know I do it for myself, I tend to write stuff that's a little bit harder than I can actually play. So there was definitely, there's some parts that it's like, ooh, I can do the drum part and I can do the organ part, but doing the drum part and the organ part and the singing part all together that's going to be tough.
Yeah, that's been the challenge, right? Like Count Sheep. Count Sheep, we were certain we'd be able to pull that off. And then the more we play it, and we played it in Rhode Island like about a month ago, we're like, can we pull this song off? Like, it's so many little moving parts all at once. And it just, in our brains, it made sense. And it would have been nice to try it a few times in front of the audience, but everything was shut down. So we just have to live with those choices that we made.
Well, are you a band that when you play live, the songs become different animals? Because there are so many bands that I'll talk to that there's kind of like two minds of it, where one is like, all of our shows are different, our songs become different each night. And other people are like, no, we like to stick to what we wrote because we like to, you know, have structure and order. I imagine you guys are more in the first, but I mean, it could surprise me and be in the latter camp.
It's a yes and no thing. Like, when we write them, we spend a lot of time thinking about where the turns are. Like, I tend to think about songwriting as storytelling, and I say, okay, well, this part's important because this is going to be what kind of ramps it up, or this is the part where it's got to be kind of like spooky or something crazy like that. And when we perform live, depending on how that night's reading, you're going to want to push it harder, and it might take something different to push that harder. So like Morgan tends to do more fills on Dirty Sheets live. And when he does, he makes a change because I play bass, it draws me in to follow him for that change, or, you know, antithetically to say, okay, I'm going to do something very different than him. And that creates a schism, which is powerful. So it's a yes and a no. You know, we write the songs with a lot of ideas in mind, but if the evening's not going to ask us to do something the way we did it on the record, we're going to have to make that change to get everybody excited.
But, you know, we do play it pretty close to how it is on the record. You know, we're definitely not like a band that's like, we don't have like the extended jams, you know. Is it like, oh, here's the part where Nicholas is going to do his bass solo, you know, like that's not really happening.
But you're so close to Vermont. Isn't the fish energy just coming down to you, making sure that you're there?
We don't smoke pot. Maybe that's why. It just skips around us, I guess.
Brewtopia Brew Pub is very proud to be serving fresh, naturally brewed ales for 25 years. It's our pleasure to offer delicious pub fare at the best value around. Whether you come to enjoy Montreal's longest-running open mic, trivia night, our amazing free live shows, or just meeting friends to catch up, Brewtopia is ready to deliver. Come check us out at 1219 Crescent Street, below St. Catherine.
If you like served with a side of a little bit of and a heaping helping of then you're gonna love BVST, your best and worst of rock and roll, country, punk, and metal, every Wednesday from 7 to 9, right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Hi, I'm Sam.
I'm John.
I'm Derek.
I'm Ian, and this is Uncut, and you're listening to CJLO.
It was interesting because I was reading an interview when you were talking about the split you did with Greylock, and you were kind of doing a breakdown song by song. And what kind of struck me as I was reading was how collaborative it seems to be between the two of you, because there are some two-person bands where there's like a main songwriter and somebody else who, you know, gets to throw in their little piece of it. But it sounds like the two of you work off each other a lot more than what I'm used to for kind of a two-person group. Is that the case, or am I misreading that?
No, it's pretty collaborative. You know, I would say Nicholas tends to have more of the ideas, and I do tend to do more of the editing and weeding out. Is that fair?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. But I Morgan has long since had this idea. So Morgan is. I don't know how to put it, but he's got these like big grand ideas, like the pug suits, or like that every song has to have a sleep, you know, title and not. And his other thing that he did was he said, you know what, this is both dogs, like we are both dogs, and at no point is there any more of one than the other. And I think that comes out really true in the songwriting and in the artwork and even in how we lay out the records. You know, in the Greylock split, you mentioned that. And I think we looked for 50-50 parody on who sings what and how much writing kind of came from each person with that split. Because he sings what? Wagon Jumper and Shut Eye. And I sing... I think I just did the last song just so that way we'd have a tiebreaker because it was like five songs or something, you know. But
yeah, you have to have a tiebreaker. Somebody has to be a winner on it. That's how it works with bands.
He just doesn't like singing, so you know I'm de facto the singer.
Well, I mean, I guess if he's doing drums and organ, that's I mean,
what a lazy fuck, dude. Can I swear? Sorry.
Yeah, of course. Oh, okay, I can edit things. Okay, we're not live here.
Yeah, live people are always like, hey, that drummer needs to do more stuff.
CJLO 1690 AM. That is an interview that Andrew did with a band from Boston, Bedtime Magic. And before that, you heard a track from their album Between the Sheets. That was Count Sheep, which I believe was mentioned beforehand in that interview. So, you know, I'm working with what I have, you see. This is your guest host for Metal March, of course, Satan. You know me by many names, Lucifer, Beelzebub. You know, if you want to get spicy with it, of course. You know, I only answer to some names for some people. Azeroth, you know, many names, but you know, I like to keep some for some people, some for others, because you know, you might not know me that way. You know, I prefer if you call me either Lucifer or Satan. That's really where we're going with this. Scratch all we're saying here right now. I'm getting away from what we're doing. Let's focus back in here on this interview. Bedtime Magic, of course, from Boston. They do a bunch of noise rock things. I'm going to be playing you stuff from that and from the split with Greylock, which is free, specifically pay what you can, today on Bandcamp. So if you go to twodogs.com, you can go and download those two records for pay what you can dollars. And as someone that invented money, I really think that you should give more of it to this band. Because, as we all know, rock music is from me. So I'm always happy when someone propagates my work, you know? So good on these Bedtime Magic gentlemen for doing that. It makes me feel good to know that so many years later, my second greatest invention, of course, under social media, is here to convert people and make them feel good slash bad, whatever it is that we're doing. So let's focus back in on this interview. Here is part three of this interview with Bedtime Magic, where we talk a bit about noise bands and, some of the improvements that this band has made over the course of their tenure. So keep it locked. This is your guest host for Metal March. This is Great A Explosive, CJLO 1690 AM. Enjoy.
I also read an interview that you were writing stuff for a remix for a local hip hop group, which sounded super interesting to me. And I know you've done this split with Greylock. I'm just wondering, like, is there anything that you guys have thought about if somebody came to you with, like, you know, well, we would like to do this collaboration, like some weird, like, subgenre of a group or something? Or are you guys willing to try anything to go with Bedtime Magic?
I mean, we're down to clown.
Yeah.
Like
ICP for life.
If you want a taste of this, like, we got a taste to give.
Yeah. We're the Costco of bands. We have samples all the time. Yeah, we're around. Like, our first year as a band or second year as a band, somebody approached Morgan and said, hey, we do have a thing here called First Night. And they were doing this whole percussion thing, like, right, like a rotunda. And I thought that was great how you got incorporated into that. And even with this, the group's called Still Gold, even with their remix, like, he was just a natural pairing with that. Because I got invited on board because I was friends with the producer. And then I was like, come on, Morgan just fits perfectly with this. And then it turned out the guy who was the co-producer on it, it knows Morgan from back in the day. And he's like, oh, Morgan Burns can be involved? Like, yeah, absolutely. I want to have him.
And we're both, like, you know, we don't play hip hop, but, like, we're both big fans. Still Go, a super talented group. Like, I think we were both pretty excited, like, that they were willing to have us come along and make some noise.
Is that released? Can I listen to that? Is that somewhere?
Yeah, you can find that on the it's available on the internet. I don't know.
Internet, you say?
It's similar to the World Wide Web.
Oh, that I've heard of. Yes, that one I get. A series of tubes, I believe, is what it is.
Yes, okay. The inner tubes.
Poop tubes.
This actually kind of, because I know you guys are a kind of mix of a bunch of different genres, and I have engaged in a debate many a times with people who try to convince me that genres are a thing of the past. That's old ways of thinking.
Who are these people you're engaging with?
I mean, I'm in college radio, so it's all kinds. Like, it's all the weirdos that are there.
It's that dastardly CMJ, isn't it?
CMJ. I miss you so much, many times. But is that something that you guys subscribe to? This kind of, like, the genre is like a thing of the past? Or is it something that still has kind of weight and meaning to you?
I mean, I don't think people will ever stop classifying music. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's part of human nature. It's, you know, part of how we communicate with each other, and, you know, how we evaluate the information that we have. We're always going to, you know, to some degree, want to subdivide that and put things into categories. Are we, like, really interested in being in a set category? Not at all. Like,
no.
I think, you know, we're interested in making the music that we want to make. I think for both of us, we're pretty interested in trying to make stuff that we haven't heard before, which is not to say, like, we're trying to create a new genre or anything like that. I think we're just, you know, I think we're both interested in making a record that nobody else is going to make. And so, like, we're probably not going to come up with, like, a rap rock song, you know, like I'm not ruling it out, but I don't think we'd be great at it. But, you know, yeah, I mean, sometimes our stuff is, like, maybe a little bit more punk rock, and sometimes it's more a little heavy metal, and sometimes it's, you know, like, sounds more grungy or whatever, you know, like, I don't know.
We play both kinds of music, country and Western. Right. I, I, Mor- Morgan hit the nail on the head. I mean, that was always the big discussion when we first started working with one another. So what do we want to do? And we didn't want to do the same thing. We both started pretty early. Like, I started when I was like 12 in bands. And Morgan, how old were you when you in your first band?
Yeah, like 12 or 13.
Yeah. And by the time that you hit your 30s, you just kind of said, all right, I did that thing. I did the hardcore band. I did the grind band. I did the punk band. What do I want to do now? And we both were like, we love caustic, really powerful music. Let's try to always challenge ourselves with that. And if we're writing something and it sounds like the four other songs that we wrote, there has to be a really good reason for that, or we have to try a different direction. So sometimes, like, there's natural pairings. Like, in my mind, Long Kiss Goodnight and Awake are songs that pair together. They're songs that have same basic theme, same basic ideas, same basic strategy, but that's entirely intentional. Whereas then we have things like, Fitted Queen, which is strange for us. You know, that's a very strange departure.
Yeah, I'm always happy, and I find this a lot with noise bands that are kind of mixing a lot more together. I don't know what it is about the category of noise bands that seem to be like incorporating, like, I guess it's just because it's noise. Like, so many, they grab from so many different genres and are able to incorporate them together way more than I think some other things in metal are. I guess because, like, when you say a thrash band, you know exactly what you're thinking of. If you say like a power metal band, you know exactly what's coming at you. But with something like noise, like, there is like a lot of elements that can be taken in via the garbage plate genre, as I believe I read in an interview for it, which
I thoroughly
enjoyed.
Yeah. I still remember when those dudes from Rochester slept over my house and they're like, we got to make a garbage plate. Is there a 24-hour grocery store? And I was like, yeah, there's one in the Fenway. That's where, you know, Fenway Park is. And they were like, oh, it's like macaroni salad on French fries. And I was like, what is going on? And then when we started this, I was like, that's pretty much what we're doing. It's just mixing things up that we like and that are good. And when we started the band, Morgan's playing is very different now. He's been taking drum lessons and he's really expanded as a player. But initially, he had more of a backbone in these beats that could be used for like break beats, you know, like everything kind of sounded like a break beat. Like, even Dirty Sheets has that one part that's like a break beat. You know what I'm talking about, Morgan? The verse section where it's like, ba-do, 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 ba-do.
Right, right. Well, I do the Motown quarter notes on the snare. If it sounds familiar, there's a good chance that I'm ripping off like an R&B record.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say now you have more of a, like, almost like a jazz thing to it. Like, you're much better at receiving the muted sections. Like, I've noticed you'll hold back for like half a beat and it's super intentional. And then you throw in the you sort of climax it, for a sexual term there. But I think it's great.
You sure I didn't just like drop a stick or anything?
No. Well, so you have been, but it's not that. There's definitely more mental activity going on as you're moving, which is impressive for me. I mean, we've been a band for 10 years. So to see that is, I'm like, hell yeah.
That's an interesting thought that I don't really remember hearing bands kind of discussing, is like direct improvements that they have. Like, obviously as a band, like, people will say like, oh, as a band, we've grown, we've done all the songwriting and, you know, things like that. But it's very rare to hear people go like, yes, the musicianship of X person has gotten so much better. Like, I think the two of you really like each other. That's what I'm thinking here. Like, that's what I'm drawing from this.
Weird, huh?
So strange. Yeah. We'll be right back.
CJLO 1690 AM. If you might hear behind me the sounds of some getting ready to play in the second hour, but first, let's keep going on this Bedtime Magic interview. Here's part four. If you miss any of this, feel free to go to CJLO.com, Grade A Explosives. Andrew will be posting it later this week, but yeah, that was, by the way, Lying Softly was the name of that track you just heard from Bedtime Magic, which you can get for Pay What You Can dollars if you go to their Bandcamp today in conjunction with CJLO. So keep that in mind. Here, more Bedtime Magic interview for you. Enjoy.
I'm curious about Boston because it seems to me, as someone from the outside, that Boston is a like very music oriented city. I guess it's maybe because of like all the universities that are there and like needs to cater to like young people who usually like music. But is that the case? And has the pandemic kind of affected, like in Montreal, a bunch of venues have kind of like gone under during the pandemic. Is it the same in Boston?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Boston has always been really a strong music scene. You know, there's like two pretty prestigious music colleges here. Plus there's all the other universities. So like there's lots and lots of college age kids that live in Boston. And in turn, that's the age that most people are going to be like, you know, making their first band or whatever. So yeah, there's always new stuff going on. It's a very transient city because there's so many college kids. Nicholas and I have been here a long time. So, you know, it definitely feels like every 4 or 5 years, there's like a whole new crop of people. You still see some of the old faces, you know, like we've been, both been around for decades at this point, but definitely there's like, oh, there's always new folks. Yeah, pandemic, definitely a whole lot of clubs closed. Definitely a lot of things of, there's sort of like bigger booking agencies that are sort of covering a lot of the rooms now. So like, it's like there's still a couple clubs, but it's really like there's only one agency that's really booking at a lot of them. So it seems pandemic has made things a little less accessible for a lot of bands, which
that part's true. If you don't have any friends, but,
Montreal has also had been affected by that. Less like there have been some venues that have shut down, but I was surprised at how many promoters like just either got either just quit or were gobbled up by larger companies. So now basically the entire city is controlled by one large, I mean, not entirely, but like 90, 95% of the shows are one large company, which has bought up all these smaller things, which is something I didn't expect to happen during the pandemic. I guess, I don't know why I wouldn't have, because like, that's how capitalism works. But
I was just going to say, when you have something like Clear Channel, and Clear Channel has investments in different things like billboards and radio stations, and I think they have some fingers in you know, visual stuff, maybe streaming services and whatnot, they're going to want to have acts at their club that are going to support their interests. They're not going to have bands at their club that aren't really interested in that or can't draw a crowd or can't generate whatever they want for a financial recovery. And I think that is what hurts things, because you have places like O'Brien's here, which clearly isn't out to make a dollar. Whatever their business model was, I have no idea. But they just, you know, they have shows there where there's three people. And
well, those, you know, types, I think that they're trying to make some money. And I think, you know, they don't intend to have shows where there's only three people. But, you know,
like, they got like a 20 odd year history of that. Yeah. Well, look at Atwood's. Atwood's is just announced today that they're closing down.
Yeah.
You know, and Atwood's had food, and to have food and alcohol and acts that are a little more accessible. They have more like folk acts or like indie acts that aren't very loud. You got to wonder how any kind of punk club or any kind of, you know, Dirty Spoon or whatever type place? I don't know. Beer bar. Like a beer bar is going to survive if that place can't.
The annoying thing too is like you bring up Clear Channel, and like as someone that's been doing radio things for a depressing amount of time, one might say, I've gotten to see like the buying up of like, I mean, the best example here in Canada is Bell, who owns most of the radio stations here, but also is in TV. And also has their hands in a lot of the labels. So like, of course, oh yes. Who is this Shawn Mendes person who is all over television and on all of these large stadiums? Like, where did he come from? Who could it be that put this talented young man up there? And it's like, well, I mean, I mean, I guess it's always been such, but it feels much more like the mask is pulled off, like the veil is away now, which...
Yeah, they're doing it out in the open. It's blatant now, you know? Maybe in the past, it was behind closed doors, it was handshake deals. You know, the payola thing, people were trying to get the moral high ground. Oh, don't do payola, whatever. Now, I don't care. People are just like, yeah, whatever, you know?
They don't really need to do payola because they own the label, they own the radio station, you know? Like, so like, it's all money coming out of the same, going out of and coming back into the same pocket, you know?
Exactly.
Do you think that Boston is able to kind of not be as... I don't want to use the word conforming because that's not quite what I mean, but is it able to kind of get a wider array of music in it since there are so many schools there and there are more young people that are in tune with things that aren't just top 40 stuff going on? Or is it just as susceptible to that kind of top 40, like this is popular mentality there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it, you know, like, top 40 is top 40, right? Like that's going to be, you know, nationwide, international, like there's plenty of that happening. You know, I think like with any kind of like underground music or really, you know, like any kind of art, people are going to find a way to make what they want to make and to see what they want to see. And, you know, like, you know, Nicholas and I have been involved in like punk rock and underground music for a long time. And, you know, like before the age of the internet, I remember sending well-concealed cash, you know, with the line always in, like on the ads and in the back of zines, you know, like hiding my money in the envelope to send, you know, to get a cassette tape from some guy in Canada that I've never met. I think that's, you know, like kids are always going to be able to, you know, find their stuff, you know, like there's always going to be tape trading or file sharing or whatever it is, you know, and like, it's certainly harder. Like Boston's a real expensive city. So we're not going through an easy time right now for art. You know, a lot of the practice spaces where bands can rehearse, a lot of those are closing down because, you know, they want to turn the buildings into luxury condos, you know.
Yep.
And a lot of the smaller clubs and halls like aren't around. But, you know, like I know it's a rough patch right now, but it, like, I have some faith that like it will come around again, you know, like kids are going to keep on working at it. You know, like there's always going to be somebody having shows in their basement, you know, like,
you know, it might be misguided, but I agree with you. Like, I think it's going to recover because they can't keep eyes on everything all the time and they can't buy everything. And even if they do, they can't keep it perfect. So at some point there's going to be like a gap in how this all works. And the thing about underground music is it's just that it's always kind of raced into gaps, or, you know, they set up some kind of yoga studio and it's not doing so well, so all of a sudden they're doing shows because one of the yoga instructors has a mohawk or something, you know.
What is this thing that you seem to be putting out? I think it's called hope.
They put in beer.
I'm not familiar with that that emotion and feeling. So it's good to hear someone has it somewhere.
Well, you know, like I'm not saying things are all great right now, you know, and like certainly it isn't like it's going to be easy for this stuff to recover. But I think people be drawn on the walls of caves, you know, like there's a need to communicate to other folks, and like kids are still going to be making loud music one way or another.
What was that band that played out of their van? They're not from here, but they did a documentary about them.
Did I know who you're talking about too? Now I can't.
I know Fever 333 did that for a while. They like rented a U-Haul and were driving around to various places in like Inglewood and playing shows in parking lots, which is like, all right, cool. But I guess when you have Travis Barker money to work with, it makes it a bit easier to do.
Right.
Get your COVID-19 vaccines. A message from CJLO 1690 AM.
Is this thing on?
Tune into Transistor Sister with me, your host Allison, where I play the song stuck in my head so they can get stuck in yours. The best in Canadian and international, new tracks and your favorite throwbacks, indie, alternative, punk, garage, shoegaze, pop, and so much more. Transistor Sister, every Sunday at noon, only on CJLO 1690 AM.
마담 MacBeach, 분노 bad virus, 살아, 세 분노 mettez un masque, lavez la main, chambez des mistas de sang, c'est Pete Douglas qui commande des autres encore, mettez un masque, lavez la main, chambez des mistas de sang, avec nous, caille bad virus, 살아, s'il vous plaît, c'est très important, merci beaucoup.
It is here at CJLO. We're doing Metal March. And everyone, in case you have been listening to the songs you've been hearing as I've been splicing them into this interview, and you like what you hear, you can go check out some Bedtime Magic. If you go to bothdogs.com, that will bring up the Bandcamp. And you can download the last record for pay what you can dollars, which, I mean, can mean free if you're really strapped, but don't. Like, just give these gentlemen some dollars for that. And also, their split with Greylock is up there. But anyway, we're in Metal March. That was a long prelude to get to this question. I like to, during the month, ask bands what their connection is to loud music and metal. So let me just throw this at you guys. Do you remember what your first gateway band was to heavy music?
So for me, my sister liked the heavy music, and because of that, because of my feelings about my sister, I avoided it like the plague. I only listened to hip hop when I was a kid, like Run DMC, Beastie Boys, Fat Boys was my favorite, Young MC. And when I went into junior high, I saw that there was it was the grunger, and a lot of kids were into rock music, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to have any friends. And I ended up hearing a couple songs that were like pretty good rock songs. And I was like, all right, at least if I have to have a conversation, it'll be about these. But mostly I gravitated towards like poppier things like pop punk, Green Day, you know, Radiohead, etc. And I distinctly remember my friends saying to me, oh, if you like that stuff, you should check out Stompbox. And I was like, what's Stompbox? And he's like, oh, they're a local band. They're really heavy. They're a hardcore band. And he couldn't find a Stompbox show that was all ages. So we went to see a band called 6L6. And I remember that show. That was a big turning point for me. Like before that, it was all about, you know, grunge bands, which could be heavy. But like, I remember thinking, I like how this punches. Like it's like, bum, 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 bum. And I just kept digging and digging. And Morgan mentioned sending the Well-Concealed Cache. A lot of those bands were on a record label called Summit, which later became Wonder Drug. And I remember just saying, well, I'll get everything in their catalog, anything that I can buy. And that led to other things, and then that led to other things. And then you'd see an ad in Heart Attack magazine that would say a cool band name like Examination of the, and you're like, oh, I want to check that band out, you know? So that for me was it. If I had to pick one band, it would probably be 6L6.
Morgan?
That's I don't know. That's not a super easy one for me to think of like what the gateway would be. Definitely, I discovered heavy metal music when I was in like fourth, going into fifth grade, discovered Metallica. And
who the hell's Metallica?
Right. Well, you know, like, I mean, this was also like, this was 1987, 1986, something like that. So, you know, like, they were still like, they had not put out Injustice for All. I actually saw them on the Injustice for All tour.
Really?
Yeah, which was awesome. But you know, my pop collected records, really, you know, there was like always a lot of music going on in my house. Pretty eclectic tastes, a lot of like 60s rock and roll. But my dad was always like interested in stuff, so I actually like I got my first Bad Brains record from my dad. So like Bad Brains is definitely like one of my like the gateway to like punk rock for me. Yeah, I think like the first band I was really like obsessed with, like wearing the tape out from like playing it over and over and over again in my Walkman was Metallica, like Master of Puppets era.
I mean, Master of Puppets is, and I will argue with anyone that says differently, the best metal record that's ever been committed to tape. It's stellar. It's stellar.
Right. It's pretty hard to beat, you know, like I listen to that record a lot.
Yeah, that's much less shameful than mine, which is I got into music much later, and so mine was at the time there was like a lot of kind of the alt rock that was going over between Top 30 and alternative radio things. And so I heard Goo Dolls' name on Top 40. And then I was flipping around. I found it on the local like alt rock station. I'm like, I should listen to this station more. And that made this. It made a stereotype. Look at me. This is what happens.
From the Goo Goo Dolls?
Yep. Kids, don't let your kids listen to the Goo Goo Dolls or it'll turn into this.
Well, before they were like a big pop band, though.
They were.
Yeah.
They actually put out like at least one really solid rock and roll record.
They did. Yep. And even when they were on MTV, their first single on MTV was like a punk song. And then they did all that other crap, Slide and all that stuff, you know.
Right. I'm not going to knock it, man. You know, like they had a solid early career, man. That's nothing to be ashamed of there, you know. And like, I can't really hang with the like sort of being ashamed of like the music that you enjoy. Like, I'm a big Justin Timberlake fan, man. Like, there ain't no shame in that, you know. Like, I like the music I like. Some of it happens to be pop music.
Drew, I'm sure as all of us here that we're into heavy music, how long did your phase of everyone has terrible music tastes except me, all these terrible pop bands that are out there, how long did that last for you guys? Because like, mine lasted a lot longer than I like to think it did, but I finally got out of that at some point because it's so obnoxious. It's so terrible.
Well, I don't think I was ever really confined to one genre. I mean, I still think most people have pretty terrible music taste, but I also have pretty terrible music taste when it comes down to it. So like, oh, well, you know, like, right. We like what we like.
That's really when you discover like, oh, something I like is really bad. Mine's Atari Teenage Riot. They're unlistenable.
What are you talking about? They're all
that band is amazing, man.
But they're unlistable. Come
they're
on.
They're like the predecessor to Sleigh Bells, and like that's they're amazing, true. You know?
Well, yeah, they're amazing. They're the
like a
they're
Gabba
the best,
band.
But
basically.
Also, like, come on. Like, when you listen to Atari Teenage Riot, it's
start
like
the riot. Start the riot. Exactly. Now.
So like they are right. Are they are they doing anything totally spectacular and amazing? Like, yes, they yes. are. I mean, yes. They're like, you know, like I put them in a similar category to the Ramones. Is it super complicated what's happening? No. But it is exactly what is needed. Like,
yes, exactly.
That band is amazing.
I'm going to listen to them after this interview.
Yeah, I'm going to too. Every time I bring them up, I'm like, I should listen to more Atari Teenage Riot. I'm like, this is so awesome. This
it's
is
really
so
good.
Terrible.
And what was it? Was it a K-Tor? Is that the other big, that was the other big like digital hardcore band at the same time, yes. Right? With the number 8 in the middle?
Yes.
They were awesome too, man.
Yes. Oh, digital hardcore.
That's our next record. That's,
yes. But it has to have a sleep reference in there.
Right.
You heard it first, everyone. Next Bedtime Magic record, Digital Hardcore, and that is it. That's the breaking news here on Great A Explosives. Guest hosted by me, Satan. Ah, yes. Oh, the loud sounds of some in the background as they get ready to play in the next hour. But we have to complete this hour first, because apparently that's how time works. When doors open. Anyway, let's get into this last part of the interview. If you missed any of this interview with Bedtime Magic, feel free to go to the CJLO website and listen to it there. Andrew's going to be posting it up later this week. But you heard most of this. Let's find out what their least favorite musical instrument is and what they have planned for the future. Let's keep it locked. Great Explosive CJLO 1690 AM.
All right, let me ask you guys one more question here, and then we'll wrap up this. And it's one that I usually have for the end. And I think you guys are perfect to answer this because you've pared down. You have a bass, a drum, an organ, vocals. So you're pretty low on here. What's the worst musical instrument?
The drums.
Yeah, anything Morgan plays. No,
definitely the drums. Like, you ever had to carry that stuff, man? It's the worst.
But if you're a good drummer, you're in high demand all the time, which I guess could be bad too, because then all these people want a piece of you.
Yeah.
So you know, my wife is a lot smarter than me in a lot of regards. She played in marching band like all through high school and in college. She played the flute, so she could take her flute apart and put it in her pocket and like walk home with it. Like, I'm not walking home with my drum set, man. Like, I can't even carry all of it at the same time. So this is why drums are the worst. Like, are they the worst instrument in terms of like how they sound and like all of that? No, but they are the worst in terms of like, if you got to carry all your stuff, don't play the drums.
That's the one of the best Phoebe Bridgers lines on her first record. She said, I asked you how I was playing drums. You said, there's too much dish to carry. That was a great line, you know.
For real? That's a line on a record?
That's a real line on a Phoebe Bridgers record.
Man, me and her. She should give me some songwriting credits or something.
You know, for me, all right, look, when I was a kid, I wanted to play saxophone. I don't know why. I can't go back in my memory that far. I can't figure it out. But I really
wanted to play what?
Saxophone.
Oh, all right.
Saxophone. And I told my mom that. I said, listen, the only two instruments I want to play are saxophone or drums. And she came home one day and she said, I have great news. I got you signed up for band. And I go, saxophone? She goes, no, upright bass. And I was like, what? And she goes, yeah, none of the other kids wanted to play it. So they said you could play it for free. And I said, oh, that sucks. And I had to lug this giant upright bass back and forth to the school. And that actually, you know, I guess that changed the course of history for me. But all of this is to say, now I really fucking hate the saxophone. It really fucking annoys me. So, like Careless Whisper. And I'm just like, God, stop playing that.
What the fuck? I don't know if you and I can be friends anymore, man. You don't like Careless Whisper?
What?
That's amazing.
Why, you're a saxophone fan? No, I like Careless Whisper. But wouldn't it be cool if it was a clarinet? Yeah, but it was a clarinet. It'd be like,
well, it would not be better if it was a clarinet.
I think it'd be delightful.
Oh no, I've broken up another band with this question.
What about ukulele?
Ukulele's fine. Here's one. It's not technically not an instrument, but I have a thing with mouth noises. Like I don't want to hear people like chewing their food. I really dislike whistling, particularly whistle an aimless tune. It drives me up a wall. So if you want to count whistling as an instrument, then I'll say that is definitely the worst instrument.
The human mouth. You don't like it. That's fair. You don't even like to sing. So it makes perfect sense. But you like eating.
I do like eating. Yeah. I just don't want to listen to anybody else do it.
Do it. Yeah. No, and to sort of reply to what you were saying about, oh, no, this one. I give him plenty of reasons to be irritated with me. I am constantly doing ridiculous stuff. I mean, look at my hair. Yeah. And then there was a what was the thing? When I came in one day and I was like, you know what? I like sugar better than I like Husker Du. And he's like, what the hell is wrong with you? How could you possibly like sugar more than Husker Du? And I was like, I do. I like that output more than I like Husker Du.
And they're both great bands, but you're just wrong, man. I'm not going to say like sugar is not bad. They put out some really amazing records, but you see what I had to put up with, man?
I see what's going on here. This is
what's your least favorite instrument?
You know, no one's ever asked me the return on that. Let me, I grew to really dislike the Vuvuzela during the World Cup time.
Because it's basically a saxophone.
Yeah, wow. That's the big horn, right?
Yeah. Like, it just has this, like, such a... I mean, it's not even... It doesn't even go anywhere. It's, like, worse than a harmonica. Like, it's just a single note that you could either make louder or quieter. It's a useless instrument, really. Like, and I mean, it's not even really... Is it really an instrument? I guess somebody uses it somewhere on something.
So if you had a long one and a short one, you'd have different pitches. So
I guess. Are Vuvuzelas all the same regulation size? I'm going to have to look into this now.
It's a subculture.
So I have a record. It's the Temple City Kazoo Orchestra, which is like, I think it's Rhino Records number one. And so it's like a whole group of people playing kazoos. They do a cover of Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin.
No way.
It's pretty amazing.
That sounds awesome, actually.
But I'm thinking... If you had an entire band of people playing the big horns there of various pitches, like that could be all right. Maybe one is evil, but like 100 of them is amazing.
Like clapping. When you have a large group of people clapping, it sounds always way fuller than a single clap. Although a single clap is always good when there's something like ridiculous happening. Like someone says something just incredibly dumb and you just do a slow clap. Always the best.
I'm trying to hold my microphone and clap. I can't do it. Yeah, it's not going to happen tonight.
Let me wrap this thing here up. So let me ask you kind of the next natural last question here, which is, what do you guys have coming up here in the next couple months? I mean, I guess up to the summer times. I know that, you know, you're always seeming to be writing something and doing team ups with things. So do you have tours planned? Do you have stuff you're going to release? What's going on with the Bedtime Magic crew?
We're going to be recording some stuff for the next LP in about 2 weeks. We have the first couple of days on that. So we'll do the first half of the record basically. And then we're going to do a little bit of a tour in May. Nicholas, you're more on top of what's happening with that.
Yeah, we got the tour coming up. We're going out to the basically the Midwest and back. We're going to do it in about a week from Memorial Day weekend. We're trying to get up to Canada to do some recording for the record. And I know Tunic's coming down, and we're scheduled to play with them in a couple months. So that'll be good.
That is an excellent pairing.
Yeah, that's like that. That's just natural in my mind. Oh, they're coming down. Put them with Bedtime Magic, you know.
Right, the Pride of Canada, Tunic.
Yeah, Tunic.
And they are good, and they have a new record coming out. I'm very excited for that. I'm cannot wait.
They've been cranking it out these last couple of years. It seems like they got lots of stuff.
Really, yeah. They did two records in a year, and I guess they reissued another one. So I guess that still sort of counts because they did two extra songs, I think, when they reissued it. But they're just churning it out, and I'm not displeased with it, really.
There you go.
Right. And it's all high quality too. It's
yeah, not- really. Well, thank you, gentlemen. And hopefully, if you come up here to Montreal, we can maybe get you into CJLO. You could do a session, and maybe use part of that on your record. Who knows?
Would love it.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Donald Roberge. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police are investigating what they believe to be Chinese police stations in and around Montreal. The makeshift stations, which are operating out of community centers in Chinatown and Brossard on the South Shore, are suspected to be run by Chinese government officials who monitor and menace Chinese-born residents, including the forceful return to their homeland for persecution. A statement from the RCMP says that they recognize that Canadians of Chinese origin are victims of alleged activities conducted by these centers, and that activities and any form of intimidation, harassment,